You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Michaela in Illinois. Actually, several questions. It's kind of a trifecta of questions. And we'll be diving into topics such as making sure we're not breaching confidentiality and having neutral toys in the playroom and religious themes in sessions. So an interesting mix of questions. We'll dive into each of those. Thank you so much, Michaela, for emailing. And just a reminder, our live event for the 300th episode is coming up May 16th, Friday at 1:30 Eastern. So please, if you are able to join, make sure you go to playtherapypodcast.com/live so that you can get signed up for that. There is not a limit on people. We just need to know how many are coming and we'll be able to send you reminders for the event. All right, so let me read parts of Michaela's email and then we'll dive in. I'll read one question at a time so things don't get muddy. So the first, I'm wondering if you have any advice regarding sharing client stories with parents about CCPT success without breaching confidentiality. For example, if I have a new 10-year-old client, is sharing, yes, I've used CCPT with another 10-year-old client and it's been successful, a breach? How do you discern this in practice and in making podcast episodes? All right. So this question has actually come up several times in maybe the last month or so, just about protecting client confidentiality in general. So I'm actually really glad that we're talking about this. I think that the litigious nature of society has scared us all. I think our legal and ethical requirements for CEUs and for grad school has scared us all. And I think that we as a field walk around really worried about doing any thing that is going to get us in trouble. And while I believe that we should be cautious and we should be careful and we should be diligent and we should be ethical and we should make informed, wise decisions, I also think that the line has become really skewed about what breaching confidentiality actually is. So let's go back to our understanding of confidentiality. We cannot reveal identifying information to where someone would be able to know who you're talking about. So let's reverse engineer this. If I say that one of my clients' name is Matt, that is not a breach of confidentiality. Even though I just said that across the airwaves, everywhere around the world, the name Matt is not a breach of confidentiality because there's no identifying information in there. None of you have any idea who my client, I don't have a client named Matt, by the way, but I'm just saying, you would have no idea. If I did have a Matt client, you would not be able to identify who he is because there's not identifying information in that disclosure. Likewise, to say I've worked with another 10-year-old, no identifying information is revealed in that. I've used CCPT with other clients. There is no breach of confidentiality in that. So we have to be intentional about our understanding and definition of confidentiality. Because if I were to give you details, the client is this old, this is their name, they live in this city, they have two siblings, they go to such and such school, now all of a sudden, there might be one or two listeners that live locally that might be able to say, oh, I bet I know who that is. So therefore, yes, we're not going to reveal specific details, but we are able to talk in generalities. And let's enlarge this to just therapy in general. When adult therapists work with, well, I guess all therapists are adults. When therapists work with adult clients, they will often say, one of my clients is really struggling in their marriage. That is a piece of information about a client, but I have no idea who might be struggling with their marriage because of that. Lots of people struggle in their marriages. That's not identifying information. One might say, yeah, I mean, I have a client that is just so anxious. I mean, like diagnosably anxious right now. That's a specific detail, but it's not identifying. So similarly, if we say, I have a child who is struggling with aggression, or I have a child who is getting kicked out of school, or I have a child who is really struggling because of a move, it's details, it's information, but it is not identifying. So I hope that that's helpful, because I think that we have really started to misattribute confidentiality concerns and say, oh, we're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to say anything that's going to help someone go, oh, I know exactly who you're talking about. Otherwise, you can speak in generalities, even with information, as long as no one is going to be able to figure out who your client is. So I hope that that is helpful. Let's dive into toys now. So the next question, I recall back from your toys episode that you described having more generic neutral toys in your room, nothing very character specific like Disney or Marvel. I'm curious about your thoughts on this. I find some kids really enjoy them, especially the Inside Out characters when using them in the sand. It seems to help them with emotional expression when they can identify with anxiety or fear, etc. Curious to know your thoughts and or rationale on keeping your toys more neutral. Okay, so there's never an extreme in any of the guidelines. However, generally speaking, a child-centered playroom is designed to be neutral. Toys are designed to be neutral. There are miniatures that are going to be part of a movie, a TV show. They're recognizable. They have a storyline. Superheroes are recognizable. Movie characters are recognizable. Cartoon characters are recognizable. Beloved characters from childhood, like Winnie the Pooh and Mickey Mouse and Daffy Duck, those are recognizable characters. So yes, of course, the playroom often includes things like that. But generally speaking, you want that to be the exception, not the rule. And here's what happens when you have characters with storylines. So I have Simba from The Lion King in my room. And I use this illustration to parents every time I give a playroom tour. So when I invite parents in the initial parent consult so they can see the playroom and I talk them through the categories of toys and I show them the miniatures in the sand, every single time I pull Simba off the shelf and I explain it like this. So when you have neutral figures, the child can be creative and imaginative and they write their story and they can give any narration that they want. When you have a recognizable character, such as Simba, the child has two choices. They can be imaginative, creative, and they can write any narrative they want about a lion cub. Or they can use Simba's storyline and they can work that into their play and into their story. And so it serves dual purpose when you have characters, if you will. And so you mentioned Inside Out. There's an association with the character and therefore the feeling because of that movie. So a child can absolutely make use of that in their play, but it is a little bit prescriptive. So you want to make sure that there are far more neutral toys that have no ascribed storyline or no ascribed narrative, because then they really truly are able to just play freely in whatever emerges in the playroom. But if you have characters that do have a storyline, a history, something recognizable about them, the child can choose how they're going to play with those toys. So I hope that that is helpful. You very also quickly referenced bibliotherapy, and you said you have several books that you typically select for the client and lay them out. True CCPT does not include books in the playroom. So if we're fully adherent, we do not have bibliotherapy or books in the playroom. I have lots of books in the lobby, and kids love to read books while they're waiting for appointments, and or siblings of clients are able to read books in the lobby with parents or alone. But if you look at the layout of a child-centered playroom, they do not have books as part of the playroom, generally speaking. And while a child, you mentioned that a child sometimes uses it as a prep for their session or a way to regulate themselves at the end. If there are no books in the playroom, they will do that in other ways. So that's just means to an end because the books are there, but a child would do that in a different manner if they did not have books, and they would still prepare to play and they would still regulate at the end of a session. So I hope that that's helpful. And then the final question about religious themes. I'm wondering if you've ever observed religious play themes in your work with a child who is Christian, Muslim, Hindu, etc. I'm curious how you might interpret this play. Would it fall into a nurturing category or an aggressive play? Or is it its own category of the child exploring and trying to make sense of the world and seeking safety in it? Do you see a difference of play in kids who grow up with a religious background versus not? And what do those parent conversations look like? Okay, so yes, religious play is worked into sessions if the child has faith as part of their reality. So a child that has any faith background, whatever it happens to be, it will almost always make its way into their play and or into the conversations while they play. Many kids will bring it up, mention it, or play it out because it's important to them. We know that kids bring things that are important to them into the playroom. We learn about their pets. We learn about their sports. We learn about their families. We learn about their school. We learn about their interests. We learn about the things that they hate. We learn about their faith. It's just in the list of things that kids bring into the playroom. So absolutely, you will see it work its way in. And you don't particularly have to categorize it. It's just what they're letting you in on. So it's connective, it's relational, and it's important to them. So if they're playing out anything related to faith or religion, it's because it's something that matters or that they're trying to sort out. So that would just be a standard part of play, not necessarily categorizable. And yes, absolutely, I see a difference in play in kids who grow up with religious backgrounds and not. As I mentioned, it will come up if it's an important element of their family, and it won't if it's not. And then what do those parent conversations look like? If it is something that's persistent and I can acknowledge that it's a repetitive symbolic play or a repetitive theme in their play, then I bring it up in a consultation just like I would bring up any other kind of play in a very neutral way, such as, and your child is definitely bringing faith into their play. So that's certainly something that is important to them and that they represent in their play pretty consistently. So it would just be a pretty general commentary on an observation of how that has been woven into their play. All right. So Michaela, thank you so much for the questions. And I hope that that was helpful for all of you. If you would like to reach out to me with a question, I would love to hear from you. Or if you just want to say hello, or you just want to just have a chat, whatever. I love it when y'all reach out to me. So you can feel free, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And I hopefully will see you on the live call. Really looking forward to that. I know it's a couple of weeks out, but it's exciting to think about getting to see faces on an episode, which I usually just stare at my sound panels. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing you when we have our meeting on the 16th. Love y'all. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.